This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, all about the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and it is episode 265. This is our mock draft show, the NFL draft. We're recording on a Tuesday night. This episode will hit Wednesday morning, about 36 hours before the NFL draft. And we've done this, I think, since, I can't remember if we did it in 2014, but I know it's been at least since 2015, with varied levels of success. A couple of years, we've had a lot of picks correct, and there was a couple of years when we've nailed the Cardinals' picks, and there's been another couple of years where it went a completely different direction. And then last year, which was, we weren't sure, but decided to go with the non-Kyler scenario, and that's kind of how that went. So, Seth, how excited are you for this draft? Because it feels like, as we've been talking in our group chats and in our group text, is that there isn't a lot of consensus about what's happening in the first round.
No, I mean, it feels like after Joe Burrow is the first pick, even the second pick is now up to be sold, and Chase Young is going to be the second player drafted. It seems like it's going to be by the Washington Redskins, but it doesn't seem like it's at 100%. It seems like it's probably at 90%. So yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting year, because then even if you just give us the first two and you just tee those up, and you'll hear that from both of us where we're not even going to take a chance. You tee those up for us. It's after that, it's a lot of questions and a lot of trying to decide what's going to happen. And so this is, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it's a definitely a weird year, because I think there's very little in terms of what's known out there at this point because of the coronavirus, because of the lack of pro days and scouts being able to chit chat. It's going to be and continue to be a very odd off season.
So let's go ahead and get started with this edition of the show. All our show is about tonight. Today is going through the first round. We're going to go pick by pick. We have trades. Is in particular this year, I know what I tried to do is to try and come as close to the real thing as we think it'll happen. So we'll see how close or how far we are off of these. I think these are more reasonable situations that we can do. I have several trades happening, even in the first 10 picks. Seth has more trades going on in the later ones, but we'll kind of take it in groups of five and then bring it back. Let's go ahead and start with the top of the draft. I think this is the part where we both can agree. This is the easy pick, even easier than it was last year. The Cincinnati Bengals, number one, will take LSU's quarterback, Joe Burrow, Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, just incredible season. There isn't any doubt. Last year, when it was Cardinals and Kyler Murray, there was at least a little bit of doubt. They took Murray, but there was debate all the way up until the day of. The Bengals not said anything, it's Burrow, and we know that, and they're smart to do it, and it's the right pick, and if they don't, they're morons, pretty much.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, unless it's a Eli Manning situation where they're behind the scenes, they're refusing, or he's refusing to sign a contract, Then yeah, it's just seems like it's an easy kind of fit and little bit of, you know, little question on what they're going to do. And I mean, he addresses the need. It's interesting to go through different people, you know, different experts or whatever you want to call them, and their opinions on Burrow and where he would rank in the class of quarterbacks over the last, you know, 4 years, going back to 2017. So, you know, you got this year's class, you have the Kyler Murray class, you have the Josh Rosen class, and then you have the Patrick Mahomes class. And you know, it's easy right now to hindsight and say, well, Mahomes was number one and, you know, of that nature. But to see that a lot of people are comfortable putting Kyler over Joe Burrow, I mean, I think that that positive feedback, even after the Rookie of the Year campaign, even after, you know, the praise that he's received, I think that's always good to see, because there's always that what if of, you know, what if they would have taken Nick Bosa or Quentin Williams at one and stuck with Josh Rosen, they'd probably be the team getting to pick Joe Burrow at this point, or having to make the decision on Joe Burrow. So you look at it from that perspective, it's really interesting, and we'll see how this, you know, plays out over the long haul, obviously. But yeah, Burrow's the guy this year. He's the obvious pick at the quarterback situation. I do wish Tua Tagovailoa would have been healthy, because it would have been a much more intriguing and interesting debate, I assume, about who was going number two or number one overall with a healthy, never injured Tua, because I think, you know, he had been the guy and he was, you know, the tank for Tua. And so would Burrow's one spectacular year or Tua's, you know, three overwhelmingly years have won out in a sense?
Yeah, it would have been interesting, especially when you look at a couple of the player comps that over on my network on Touchdown Wire from Doug Farrar, he put together some player comps. And, I mean, the quarterback comp that he gave Joe Burrow was Sam Bradford. That's not overwhelmingly good, but given a good supporting cast, that can be really good because they're talented. While Tua Tagovailoa gets the Drew Brees comparison. And that, I mean, there aren't many Drew Breeses. He's one of the most prolific passers in NFL history. I mean, he's number one in touchdown passes, number one in passing yards, and he's going to play at least another year. And you can almost always pencil in, you know, 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns pretty much every year. But that's the type of thing that would Tua have been number one? I mean, if he were healthy, I would think so. Even though Burrow's year this last year was incredible. But
what if moving on to, what if it was just a ACL?
Oh, you know, Bradford was still number one when he basically missed that year. So I guess that, I mean, if it weren't the hip, and it weren't not the hip and the ankle and this and that, I can see that. I can see where he probably would have been the clear number one, and no one else would be talking about. And then Burrow would have been the flash in the pan, I guess.
Yeah. So, no, it's just interesting. And, you know, when there's nothing to talk about with the first two picks, it makes it a lot more difficult.
So, moving up to number two, we don't differ in these picks. We both have the Redskins staying with the second pick, and they take Ohio State pass rusher Chase Young. That's kind of a no-brainer. It's almost a no-brainer because for most people, he is the best player in the draft. He's this year's Nick Bosa. And Nick Bosa was fantastic last year as a rookie, incredibly impactful. I think you there was kind of a debate early on as would it be Young or would it be Okuda? But when you look at the skill set that Okuda has and you look at the defenses that Ron Rivera's teams have had in the past, that man cover guy isn't necessarily what they value as much as they would a really good pass rusher.
Yeah, and I mean, you go back and you look at the grading differences and where, you know, again, Chase would be. It's interesting because Chase was better in college than Nick Bosa was. Obviously healthier, but he had a better, you know, career. He won all the awards. He did everything. He was, you know, just a special kind of spectacular player. I mean, he's as close to Myles Garrett or you know, whoever you want to put up there as, you know, the top guy. And so it's just, it's interesting to see. It's really cool to see the continued kind of dominance of that Ohio State defensive line and what they get from their defensive line, and not only what they get, but then the success they have in the pros.
For the third pick, this is where things get a little bit different. Seth, give us your pick for the Lions. You have them staying put, but here's the part that, well, at least for the listener to the podcast have heard from us, he's going to save the Lions are going to save the Cardinals.
Yeah, so they're going to go with Derek Brown. They're going to come out of their, you know, two Matt Patricia drafts with TJ Hawkinson, a tight end, and Derek Brown, a down lineman, as their two picks. It's going to be an interesting way to build a franchise, but I think they take Brown, who is, you know, again, I think people, when I talk about Brown, think that I don't like him, and I do. I think he's a very, very good player. I just, at his size, there's just so few athletic comps out there that play at higher than a 70% snap clip. And so it's not like a run pass thing. It's more of a, they just, the body at the pace that the game is played now, you know, for his size, they just don't play that many snaps. I mean, they just physically can't. And so you add into the fact that he's clearly a more dominant run stopper than pass rusher. And I'm of the believer that pass rushers, you know, have a much higher value than run stoppers at this juncture. Then, you know, it just, all of it kind of goes together that I would, you know, I wouldn't take Brown that early. And so the Lions do it and kind of save some Cardinals fans some heartache, because I know there are fans of his in the fan base, and more power to them, but just not for me.
And for me, this is where the first trade happens. There's been a lot of chatter around the media about how the Dolphins might not be all in on Tua. That the injury history, this, that they like Justin Herbert more. I'm going to ignore that, especially when you consider the Dolphins' history, because they once passed on a similarly comped player in Drew Brees because of a shoulder, and I'm sure to this day they still regret that. So I have them making the move from number 5, trading up to number 3. I didn't deal with the particulars of the deal except for this. It will include their third and final first round pick. So they give up number 5, number 26, and then I don't care about the rest because that's not part of the mock draft, to move up to number 3. And they take their quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. And it's the Dolphins are actually a good situation for Tua, especially with the possibility that he needs to sit out this year. And they've already got Ryan Fitzpatrick, so you've got a guy who can start. And they've loaded up this team with some veteran talent, so they should be able to be a competitive team at some level now that the Patriots appear to have taken a step back. They've added some quality players so that they shouldn't be an abomination. They shouldn't be Cardinals 2018 bad. They may look more like the Arizona Cardinals of 2019. And that sets Tua up to then take over fully healthy, maybe even get some playing time as a rookie. I like the situation for him. He's got the talent, and I don't think the Dolphins will regret this. This will be a very big move for them, and I believe it is a smart move. Tua is more talented, the quarterback that they have picked up, that they've had on their roster for quite some time. So that's the first domino to fall in terms of the quarterbacks and trades. It's the first shakeup, and that's what happens with number three. Number four, the New York Giants. We both have the same concept, but go with different players. Who's your pick for the Giants?
I'm going to take a name that has not been bandied about, and that's just because it's Dave Gettleman, and he is 1,000% insane. And Andrew Thomas, the tackle out of Georgia. Justin and I have talked about this. He might be the surest of the tackle prospects in the draft. He is a guy that has played in the SEC at both right and left tackle with not just varying levels of success, but real strong success. I think he's one of those guys that is fairly bust proof as long as he stays healthy, in the sense that you're going to have a guy that is going to be a, you know, a fixture on your offensive line for a long time. Maybe he is not, he's not Joe Thomas. Maybe he's not, Joe Staley, but maybe he is a guy, you know, like DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who's actually his comp for me, that is just the guy for 10 years, doesn't make any Pro Bowls, doesn't make any all pro teams, but you never hear about the Giants needing a left tackle or right, or they decide to deploy him for another decade.
Now, the name that had been most connected with the Giants up until recently was Iowa's Tristan Wirfs. On Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah's, his draft conference call last week, he hears things. Now, he evaluates his top 50 according to what he evaluates, and then his mock drafts he puts together based on things he hears. He said he's hearing more Wills, and he sort of promised, he kind of teased when he was on the Rich Eisen show, recently, that there's going to be a surprise probably at number four. I don't know if that's, you know, going crazy with, say, Isaiah Simmons, which would be kind of out there for Dave Gettleman, although he does like his linebackers. I think it's going to be Jedrick Wills, which is a good fit. He is arguably the highest upside right tackle, and the Giants already do have a left tackle in Nate Solder, and Wills, especially if you believe what some do, is that he can play the left side, even though he's never done it. He has the ability to do so. That makes that pick even better. So you've got Andrew Thomas as the first offensive lineman off the board, and I've got Jedrick Wills. Rounding out the top five, this is where you have the Dolphins staying put because they didn't trade up. This is now the Lions pick for me. They take the player that many have them taking at number three, and that's Jeff Okuda, the cornerback out of Ohio State. The Lions have a desperate need at cornerback now that they traded away Darius Slay, so they potentially get better, but they definitely get younger, and they are able to throw him out there at corner as their number one corner and potentially have their Patrick Peterson-type impact player. I like the pick. I think they would have taken him at number three if the Dolphins hadn't come calling. And so this is just even better for them overall.
Yeah, this is the Solomon Thomas trade all over again, right? Hopefully it works out better for for the Giants or for the Lions than it did the 49ers with Solomon Thomas. But yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's a that's a smart pick and a smart play if the Lions can trade back a couple spots, because even the guy I took is still on the board. So they can take one or the other. And those are the two that they're linked to. And so, it, you know, if you trade down two spots, pick up a, what'd you say?
Another at least first, the 25th or, pick in this, in the first round, and probably something else, because the Dolphins are loaded with picks.
And so, yeah. So, I mean, it just, it's an interesting thing. So I have the Dolphins staying there and, taking the second quarterback off the board and not the one you're thinking of. I have them going Justin Herbert. Didn't we hear today that they're not going to take Herbert, or was that a different, but so, you know, it's that time of year where everybody's assuring you that they know what's going to happen. I'm not going to assure you of anything. I am just kind of piecing this together. I don't think that they're going to take Tua, and that's kind of what it boils down to, is that I don't think they're going to take Tua. I think they're going to take either they're going to take an offensive lineman, or if they take a quarterback, it's going to be Herbert. So, I mean, those are kind of the scenarios I have playing out there, and that's what I think is going to happen.
And that makes sense. If they don't, if you don't think they'll take Tua, the most logical sense there would be for them to take Herbert as their quarterback, because they're in a situation where they need a quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a nice guy to have on a bad team because he's fun. But you're in a bad situation if you don't believe in the quarterbacks to take 1-5. That is the most important position. Now they've got two other first round picks heading into the draft, so they could draft one at 18 or 26, but that tells you they don't really believe he is the franchise quarterback necessarily, because they would take him first because of it's the quarterback tax. It's just how it goes. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on to the next five picks, 6 through 10. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We move on to the next segment, 6 through 10. This is the one where we're going to get the Cardinals pick, but first up are the Los Angeles Chargers. The two of us have different players going here, and mine has been out. The Chargers have been connected to Justin Herbert for a long time. Now, you've said that there's two names that you've heard. And for the life of me, even though they both make sense, I cannot wrap my head around this offseason and how they traded away their left tackle, acquired a guard, acquired a right tackle, and they have this big hole at left tackle. They have to go left tackle. It's the only thing that makes sense. Unless they've got Jason Peters on speed dial, and he's old. And now I think he still wants to play and he's still pretty good, but he's old and he's missed some time. So I can't believe they'd do that. So I've got them taking Andrew Thomas, that sure left tackle. If the Cardinals were going with an offensive lineman, he's my number one lineman. He'd be the one that if they had their choice of them, I'd want the Cardinals to take him. And I think the Chargers will, and we're going to find out that I think the Chargers have a plan at quarterback, but they're going to roll with Tyrod Taylor this year, and they'll be okay. And Tyrod Taylor will quickly be replaced by someone else, as tends to be his career. What's your pick for the Chargers?
And Anthony Lynn had Tyrod in Buffalo, if I remember right. So, you know, that makes sense. He's a guy that trusts in him. But yeah, for me, it's interesting if they don't take a quarterback, if they don't take Tua here or Justin Herbert, then you're sitting and the idea of an offensive tackle makes plenty of sense. But I have them taking the third best defensive player in the draft, and a guy that a lot of people haven't plugged into this place, but who I've heard whispers that maybe they would take him is Isaiah Simmons. So the Chargers shock everybody, take Simmons at six, and kind of deploy one of the most versatile and devastating defenses in the NFL. And let me explain why I think this is going to happen if Simmons is even there. The Chargers, more than anything else, have to find a way to stop the Kansas City Chiefs. The entire process of their offense or offseason is about stopping the Kansas City Chiefs. So I think that adding Simmons with Okuda off the board is – or, sorry, with Brown off the board and their investment in the offense or the cornerback position this offseason, I think it's going to be Simmons. That gives them Derwin James and Isaiah Simmons to deploy to be able to, you know, go after Travis to work middle of the field to do different things. So I think Simmons to the Chargers makes a lot of sense that nobody's really talking about at this point.
Moving on to number seven, we've got the Carolina Panthers and the last pick before the Cardinals make their selection at number eight. Who comes off the board for you?
The final pick before the Cardinals is one that all the fans are clamoring for at this point. And unfortunately, the Panthers are just bad enough that they're able to not just beat the Cardinals with Kyle Allen at quarterback, but also beat them to Jeffrey Okuda to get a cornerback.
And the Cardinals, probably, and Cardinals fans here are worried in my situation, because Okuda's off the board, that the Panthers are probably going to take Isaiah Simmons, but they don't. Because in this situation, I have the Browns getting worried, and they have their eye on an offensive lineman who I'll say is, of all the offensive linemen, he is the perfect fit for them for the Cleveland Browns. So I have them trading up from number 10 to number 7, and they take Mekhi Becton out of Louisville. He is their left tackle. He fits their blocking scheme perfectly. They now have invested heavily by adding Becton on the left side, and Jack Conklin on the right side, and that should give Baker Mayfield now some time and protection to be able to make plays now in their new offensive system and be able to get the ball off to their new weapons. With where they've got their old weapons in Odell and Jarvis Landry, they've got their new tight end, they've got it's perfect for them. But I don't think they want to wait, and so they've targeted number 7 to move up to get Mekhi Becton, and then the Browns will and then the Panthers will go down to number 10, and that's what, and this throws a loop for the Cardinals fans, because guess who is now available for number 8? None other than Isaiah Simmons. He falls to the Cardinals, and this is the scenario that I have. I fully believe that Simmons trumps the other players that they like, trumps CeeDee Lamb, trumps all the offensive linemen. And I actually, before I played this out, I anticipated that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would want to move up to get an offensive lineman. We've heard rumblings that the Bucs at 14, the Broncos at 15, and the Falcons at 16, all wanting to move up. Tampa Bay moving up makes a lot of sense because they just got Tom Brady. They don't have a right tackle right now because DeMar Dotson is gone. And so they go up. They were going to make a trade with the Cardinals to move up and get Tristan Wirfs. But when Isaiah Simmons is on the board, it doesn't happen. The Cardinals run to the Zoom to whatever, however they're going to do this, to submit the name. Isaiah Simmons is the Cardinals pick. I love that. You are not as high on him because of Vance Joseph and where you think how he'll be used or his players comped. I actually love this pick. One, as a rookie, I think he will be used perfectly because he will be able to be used in a variety of settings. He'll be able to be a backup edge rusher. He'll be a coverage guy. He'll be a guy that can play some inside backer or play some safety because there is no really starting job that he could take. He's perfect, and then you can kind of see where he will fit best in 2021. Maybe that's a deep, maybe that's a safety, maybe that's an inside linebacker, or maybe he plays a variety of positions, or maybe they see him doing more off the edge. I love this pick. He's my favorite. I mean, aside from like Chase Young and Jeff Okuda were my two favorites, I never ever thought that they would be on the board. Simmons is my top pick, other than CeeDee Lamb, who I don't think they're going to pick, and any of the offensive linemen. So I am thrilled. Cardinals fans are excited. Isaiah Simmons is the pick for mine.
Yeah, and I've got the Cardinals addressing the offensive line, taking, you know, one of the more athletic offensive line prospects to come out in a long time, a guy that has a high-end comp to Lane Johnson, and a guy that, you know, should probably help kind of solidify things for a while in Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa. Wirfs is a guy that, you know, comes from an O-line factory. He still needs some work, but he's a 20-year-old offensive line prodigy, one of the most athletic testers in NFL history, and a guy that, you know, people that I've spoken to in the NFL have compared to Quentin Nelson could be that good if he was to move to guard. And so you're looking at, you know, maybe getting the best offensive lineman in this draft with the eighth pick and getting a guy that can, you know, be an anchor and protector for the franchise quarterback for the next decade.
And pick number nine, how that Wirfs would be a great pick. I don't have any complaints about that. But both of us, for when we move on to number nine, we both have a trade happening, but two different teams moving up. Who is your team moving up to number nine?
I've got the Falcons making the big jump all the way from 17 up to number 9 with the Jaguars. The Jaguars are an interesting situation. I've heard from people I trust there that they really are hoping Derek Brown falls there. So if he doesn't, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. In this situation, they trade out with the Falcons, who are like ravenous to move up. I mean, I think it's the worst kept secret that they are willing to just sell the entire draft to move up right now. And so they're going to move up and take CJ Henderson, the second best corner in this draft, maybe the best pure cover man in this draft, but there were some effort inconsistencies, let's call them, in his 2009 season. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out. If that was a guy that was just making sure he stayed healthy to get to his rookie season in the NFL, or if that is a prolonged issue. But from a coverage standpoint, from a footwork standpoint, Henderson is, you know, one of the top guys to come out. Not a guy that I'm a huge fan of, but people I trust like him. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And for me, we heard over the weekend that the Broncos want to move up. They're eyeing number 10 and they're eyeing number 8 for the Cardinals. Now, in my scenario, the Browns have already moved up. And so The Panthers already moved three spots. They will not want to drop out further than that. And the Cardinals didn't want to make a deal with the Bucs, so they won't want to make a deal with the Broncos. And so they split the difference, because that we've heard from the initially kind of the report that the Jaguars pick at number 9 was kind of the sweet spot for the 14, 15, and 16th picks with the Bucs, Broncos, and Falcons. And what you have that happening is that. And so the Broncos move up to number 9, and they get their Jerry Jeudy. They get the receiver that they want, and that moves the Jags down to number 15 overall. So that the first receiver off the board is not CeeDee Lamb. You still don't have a receiver coming off the board at all. So here we go. The Broncos with the 9th pick take Jerry Jeudy. Now at number 10, this is where the Browns were to pick, but now the Panthers are set. After their trade down, Derek Brown's slide comes to an end, and the Panthers pick up Derek Brown. That's not a complaint. And, you know, the Cardinals had him available that they could have, but they pick up Simmons instead. And Brown ends up where a lot of people think is going to end up anyway, only that might be at number 7 with the Panthers. And so now they just pick it up, and they pick him up at number 10. Who's your guy?
Yeah, the Browns follow suit with the Jags. They trade down. They love to trade down, acquire assets. And I'm with Jess. The first wide receiver off the board is going to be in a trade up, as the Broncos want to ensure that they get their guy, Jerry Jeudy, at 10. So you got him going at 9 with a trade up. I've got him going at 10 with a trade up, both to the Broncos. We're hearing a lot of the same stuff, Jess.
All right, coming up next over the Rise Ups here at Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Move on to the next set of picks, numbers 11 through 15. That's coming up next on Rise Ups Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We now move on to the next set of 5 picks. And now we have the New York Jets. The trades have dissipated for a little bit. Both of us have them going offensive line. In this case, they are glad to pick up Tristan Wirfs after Jedrick Wills is off the board. And in fact, it's the last of the 4 tackles. This is where things work out really well for the Jets. They still pick up an offensive lineman, which is going to affect the Bucs here. I'm going to kind of preview that. It's going to affect the Bucs here coming up soon, because they wanted to trade up to get an offensive lineman, and now they miss out on them. So keep an eye on that. That's going to happen here soon. But the Jets get Tristan Wirfs. Who's your pick for New York?
I have Mekhi Becton coming off the board here. So same idea, but Thomas and Wirfs are off the board. They go Becton with their pick. And when we get to when Wills finally comes off my board, I'll kind of give a little brief synopsis of what Jess and I have heard and a potential reason that he could fall. Not something that Jess and I think is true, but what some teams have maybe red flagged on Jedrick Wills.
Pick number 12 will make many Cardinals fans sad, and it will devastate my son, Diego, who is the biggest CeeDee Lamb fan in the world right now. He is dead set on the Cardinals taking Lamb. I want Lamb. If Simmons isn't there, I don't think the Cardinals are going to go that direction. He ends up on the Raiders, and we both have that pick, and I think it's a pick that totally makes sense and is the right pick for them, and a sad pick because the Cardinals miss out on that impact player.
Yeah, and you know, it goes back to what we talked about with the Chargers. The idea in the AFC West, the AFC in general, is that you have to compete with the Chiefs. And at the picks where the Broncos and the Raiders are located, there just isn't a defensive player that will change the game enough to justify the pick. So that comes back and you say, okay, well, if we can't stop them, we have to keep pace with them. Lamb, to me, is the third best player in this draft after Young and Okuda. So I think, you know, the Raiders get a steal and get a great player.
At number 13, you've got a deal coming. What is the deal there? The 49ers have the 13th pick after they dealt DeForest Buckner to the Indianapolis Colts. However, they trade out, which we've heard the report that they are open for business for both the 13th and the 31st and the 31st pick. Who is your trade partner for the 49ers?
It's in this scenario with the two wide receivers off the board. The Eagles can't wait any longer. They move up and they go get Henry Ruggs, a guy that they allegedly really like. The thing with the 49ers is they have two first-round picks, but then they don't pick again until, like, what, the fourth round? So
the fifth round. They don't have a second, third, or fourth round pick.
Yeah, so the idea of trading back from 13 – to 21 is a value of about 350. That would mean that they could get the 21st pick and the Eagles 53rd pick. Maybe the 49ers have to throw in that fifth rounder, but I think they trade basically a second for a fifth in a heartbeat. Remember, this is the defending NFC champions. They don't need immediate impact talent, but what they need is guys that they can have in the pipeline as guys either price out or, you know, kind of what they're having to do now, where allegedly there's a big old fire cell of guys that they just brought on, including D Ford and Quan Alexander, that they're willing to start, you know, kind of making room for, because they have to pay George Kittle what I think will amount to roughly $400 million or something near that.
For me, the 49ers stay put, and while Henry Ruggs would be a perfect pick for them after Emmanuel Sanders leaves in free agency, however, with the loss of DeForest Buckner, they also, kind of the strength of the team, what sort of set them up for the success they had, was that constant first-round talent on the defensive line. I'm not convinced that they won't go that direction again, and so I have them taking the next best defensive lineman in the draft in South Carolina's Javon Kinlaw to kind of fill that void. He is kind of the opposite of Derrick Brown. He flashes. He has the physical traits that you love to see. And he could be a game wrecker in the passing game, but there's a little bit more risk involved. There's some injury red flags with some weight in there as well. But that 49ers system does really well with top talent defensive linemen. And say what you will of what they've done, what Mike Shanahan's done there. Kyle Shanahan has done there. A lot of that was built initially by the work that they did on the defensive front. And so they continue with that foundation, and they've still got the opportunity. And I'll preview, they are going to trade out of number 31 as we get to the end of the draft later. So they get their defensive line talent, their guy to replace Buckner. We move on to the 14th pick. Now, the Buccaneers at number 14, they're upset now. Their plans of getting an offensive lineman have been thwarted in my set. They wanted to trade up. They had a trade agreed to in place that they were going to make in with the Cardinals, and they were going to take Tristan Wirfs. But Wirfs is off the board, and so none of the top four tackles are available. They trade out, because guess what? The same thing as what Seth had going at number 13 is the Eagles. They see that Henry Ruggs is still on the board, and they make the big jump of seven spots up. The Bucs trade back. They acquire more draft capital, and the Eagles get their speedy receiver in Henry Ruggs. That will be a big boost to that offense so that they actually have a wide receiver that they can throw to.
I have the last tackle coming off the board here. We know Bruce Arians isn't afraid of rumors or speculation or issues with a guy. He trusts himself and his coaches to be able to get the most out of players. So Jedrick Wills goes at 14, a mini kind of slide. I mean, four offensive tackles taken in the first 14 picks is still ludicrous. So, but a mini slide. So the report came out about a week ago, right, that Jedrick Wills started his – or started and restarted his what's the test called now?
Three cone.
Yeah, his test five times. And so there's some concern by teams that he might have maybe some reading issues or something to that effect. I don't buy those things. I'm not worried about it. Remember, Kyler Murray didn't score very high. Lamar Jackson didn't score very high. And
Patrick
these guys,
Peterson didn't either.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, it's not a big deal. However, I know that it does put a flag next to a guy for some teams, and then if you get two similar prospects, so a Tristan Wirfs and a Jedrick Wills, or Andrew Thomas and a Jedrick Wills, that teams will go with the guy without that flag if everything else being equal. I believe John Gamadoro today on his show said that the Cardinals won't have interest in Wills. Is that what was said on the show today, or
I didn't hear it on the show myself. It's what my son told me. He said he was shook because that was apparently that if CeeDee Lamb can't be the guy, I think the second place guy in way second place is Jedrick Wills for him.
And so, you know, if that's the case, it would make sense if there was some type of red flag, because from a pure on-field scouting perspective, there are very few holes in Jedrick Wills' game. So there has to be something that obviously the public isn't privy to have a guy of that talent be off a board of a top 10 team. Maybe not off a board, but a guy they wouldn't take at eight, I guess, is a safer way to say it.
And at the final pick of this segment, with the 15th pick, as the Broncos moved up to number 9, the Jags now sit at number 15. They actually don't go with a cornerback, as some believe will happen. They instead go with Justin Jefferson, the receiver out of LSU. And they give Gardner Minshew someone to throw the ball to. However, yours has – this is where we have, boom, big move number 2 kind of for – this is probably the biggest move of the draft of the first round in your mock.
Yeah, so the Browns went from 10 to 15, got 2 third-round picks. The Broncos have 3 third-round picks. They got 2 of them with their move down 5 spots. Now they make another trade down. They go from number 15 to number 23. And the New England Patriots, who do not have a second round pick, come up and stop the free fall of Tua Tagovailoa. The Browns get New England's first round pick. They get their pick, and then they get a 2021 first round pick. The Browns have 900 picks, like they always do, to really kind of be players in the late first and early second round and really kind of run the draft. The Patriots and Bill Belichick have their guy, their quarterback. They don't have to worry about – there's zero pressure on Tua in year one to come out and do anything to be the immediate savior and replacement of the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. In fact, he gets to sit with Bill, learn a year under Bill and Josh McDaniels, and they get to kind of create a nuanced environment. Just laid it out in his scenario with the Dolphins. I just think that if Tua is going to go sit a year, there's probably not a better place to sit and learn than New England. So the free fall goes to 15. The Patriots make the move. They draft once on the first 2 days of the draft, and they're happy with their turnout of Tua Tagovailoa.
Come up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll be back for the next five picks going through 16 through 20. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Tua's fall has ended. We now have, at least for me, the next five picks are unaffected by trades. Next up are the Atlanta Falcons for me. It's going to be the Jaguars for Seth as the Falcons traded all the way up to number 9. But the Falcons, they take C.J. Henderson, the cornerback, and that is kind of how things go for them. They end up getting the same player that Seth has them taking, but they get it in their place instead. For all the reasons that Seth did, only they didn't have to give the draft capital to do it.
Yeah, and again, that makes a lot of sense. You get a guy that they want. They just, you know, I have a feeling that they've been so upfront about trading up that they're going to do it. I have the Jags sitting, and like I said, the Jags have been linked to Derek Brown and just spelled it out with the 49ers pick that the next best guy is in this draft along the defensive line is Javon Kinlaw. So the Jags move down, they pick up a second round pick, and they are able to draft Javon Kinlaw out of South Carolina and really kind of change their look. They lose Calais Campbell. They hope that Kinlaw can replace him. I don't know if anybody can replace Calais, but hopefully they have more success than the Cardinals did with Robert Kimdiche.
Oh, goodness. For number 17, who is your pick for the Cowboys?
Cowboys go with safety Xavier McKinney out of Alabama. McKinney is one of my favorite players in the draft, but I fall for these true kind of free safety guys every year. I'm a sucker for these guys. Malik Hooker, was another one that I was a big fan of. So Xavier McKinney goes to the Cowboys, answers their need at the safety position.
And for me, they go with an edge rusher, and they add LSU's Kalevon Chasen. So they add strength and pass rushing production off the edge. Both players, I've seen Henderson there. They could have gone and had the Falcons gone with Chasen. Those two players could be flip-flopped very easily. I've seen the Falcons go with the pass rusher. The Cowboys could definitely go with Henderson to replace Byron Jones. But I think it's a good addition either way. Now, the Dolphins, we have them in agreement with number 18. Offensive lineman, correct?
Yeah, they take the guy that I think is going to probably end up being the best offensive tackle in this class, and Josh Jones. So they trade Laremy Tunsil. They get a first-round pick for him, and they don't even have to use that pick on the offensive lineman. They're able to use the Steelers pick in trading Minka Fitzpatrick to get Josh Jones out of Houston. Maybe the guy with the most upside in this draft, got better every year at Houston under four different offensive line coaches, projects out as a high-end comp to Teron Armstead, a multi-time all-pro left tackle. So we'll see how that goes.
And I have them, for all the same reasons, taking Josh Jones as well. We go to number 19. The Raiders are up. They have the Bears pick. They go Oklahoma again for me. They pick up Kenneth Murray, inside/middle linebacker, so off the ball linebacker, however you want to call it. While Isaiah Simmons is the physical freak that everyone talks about, Seth talked about it at length on our defensive preview show, Kenneth Murray is really not far behind, and you know you're going to get a guy that is going to play great at that linebacker position because he is nearly as athletic. He's got the size. He's got the leadership. He is incredibly coachable. He comes from a great family situation, police family. So in terms of personality, physical traits, you really can't go wrong with him. If it weren't for Isaiah Simmons, Kenneth Murray would get much more press this year, and the Raiders pick him up. They've picked up two really great players in CeeDee Lamb and Kenneth Murray in this draft.
Yeah, and so kind of echoing off what I talked about earlier with Lamb, and you know, if you can't stop him, you got to score with him. Now they get a guy at a better value in Christian Fulton that can potentially maybe, I don't know, throw something at Patrick Mahomes before the game to try to stop the Chiefs offense because they're going to be unstoppable still.
And with the 20th pick, the Jaguars, who have the pick from the Rams that they picked up from the Jalen Ramsey deal, they pick up there for my deal. For my pick, they are going at cornerback, and they get TCU's Jeff Gladney. He's a little undersized, but he has proven his college career. He's a guy you want on the team. He's got the ball skills. He's physical. He's going to fight. And you know, in terms of mentality, he's got that Jalen Ramsey mentality, just in a slightly smaller frame.
Yeah, he works a lot like Adoree Jackson as like a high-end comp. They're the same size. Jackson tests a little better. I really like Gladney. I think that's a good fit. I have them taking the guy you had them take at 15, Justin Jefferson. They're in desperate need of help for Gardner Minshew. yes, the rumors are already starting that the Jacksonville Jaguars are looking to 2021 and Trevor Lawrence. So enjoy.
And Gardner Minshew, let's be honest, he's the perfect quarterback to have for that. He's like Ryan Fitzpatrick. He will give you fireworks, and then he will put up really good numbers for really bad teams.
Yep, that's going to be Gardner Minshew's career.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We move on to the next five picks, and that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Pick number 21 was supposed to be the Eagles. We both had them trading up to get Henry Ruggs. For you, they went up to number 13. And for me, they went to number 14. So now for you, the 49ers now pick at number 21. Who is your guy for San Francisco with the Eagles' original pick?
They're going to go Denzel Mims, the massive wide receiver out of Baylor. He is not a refined prospect yet, but that seems to be Kyle Shanahan's MO. He brings in Deebo Samuel, Dante Pettis. He brings in these guys that have some flaws, but they have a trump card. Mims' trump card is he's 6'3", 215 pounds, runs a 4.37, so he's going to be able to run by you and out jump you. I think that's a nice fit, and like I said, they're able to pick up one day two pick already.
And this is where the Bucs traded back to, and so their plan still works. They didn't get one of the top tackles, but instead they move back and still get a tackle, a very talented Austin Jackson out of USC. In terms of character, there's a lot to like about him. He's not as near a sure thing, but there's one thing you're going to like. You're going to like the mental makeup and the heart that this kid has as he gave up, a kidney he gave up for his sister, which kind of ruined some of his off-season work.
Yeah, he's a good kid, and he's kind of that next tier along with Josh Jones and the guy that I have going in two picks. So, you know, it's a nice fit and makes sense for Bruce Arians because they are, you know, kind of in a win mode now. They've got Tom Brady for three seasons. You know, we'll see how long that actually lasts, but they just got Rob Gronkowski for a fourth-round pick. He's already taken a physical and passed it. So they're going to put up some fireworks down in the bay.
Number 22, the Minnesota Vikings. They have the 22nd pick because they traded Stephon Diggs to Buffalo. And you have them replacing Diggs with a receiver. Who do you have?
Yeah, I've got them taking Jalen Reagor out of TCU. A guy that has a lot of talent, that is able to win in a multitude of ways. He's a really interesting prospect. I think that they are looking to replace Stephon Diggs, and Reagor allows them to do that with the 22nd pick.
And the Vikings, with the first of their two first-round picks, I have them, instead of going at receiver, they go with the cornerback. They grab LSU's Christian Fulton as they look to rebuild that defense again, as they need to, as Xavier Rhodes has kind of hit an end to his good, like being good. Christian Fulton, they'll add some youth to that secondary. We move to the New England Patriots at number 23. At least for me, this is where the quarterback fall ends for Justin Herbert. Now, so this means that both Seth and I have the Patriots picking up their franchise quarterback. Neither one is a player that anyone expected they would get. I have Herbert falling to the Pats at number 23 in very Aaron Rodgers style. They don't even have to go up and get him. He lands in their lap at number 23, as good a situation. Now, I'm not very high on Herbert overall. However, you put him in an organization like the Patriots with Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, you have to like the chances of success there. Now, for you, it's now the Browns pick, and you have them picking up a name that's been thrown around for a little bit that they have been kind of targeting. It's kind of a weird thing to do, to trade back to target a player that they really want.
Yeah, Ezra Cleveland out of Boise State. They're able to just accumulate a ton of day two picks. They get a 2021 first round pick, and then they get the guy that, I mean, like Jess said, they've been linked to Ezra Cleveland. So, I mean, they wouldn't take him at 10, right? But you trade down a little bit and you get the guy you want. And if you're able to trade down twice and just clean up, yeah, I mean, it could be, you know, whether or not you agree with the pick, if that's a guy that you really like and then you're able to accumulate a ton of other assets, it's smart business. Again, whether or not you agree with the pick, that's allegedly a guy that they like a lot. So we'll see what happens. But if they can do something like that, it would be robbery.
Number 24, the New Orleans Saints. We reach an agreement again. We both have LSU's linebacker Patrick Queen, a guy who, again, were it not for Isaiah Simmons and were it not for the steady production of Kenneth Murray, Queen for some people is even better. They like even more than Kenneth Murray, and that's saying something. And the fact of the matter is that he is a little bit of a late bloomer. What do you like about the fit in New Orleans there?
The Saints need some athleticism and some youth on that defense to pair with a lot of really talented guys they already have there. Queen offers that. He's a, you know, a local kid. He's going to be able to really, you know, be a guy that comes in and plays in different roles. Undersized at what, 6 foot, 230 pounds, but he's very young. He'll be 21 at the start of the season. He's a big play machine. Comps out high end to like a Telvin Smith, who was a very, very good player until he decided to take a mental health break from the Jaguars, which apparently I think a lot of players are looking at doing right now. So, you know, Queen in that defense offers versatility, is great against the pass, and now you've got, you know, to deal with Rob Gronkowski. I'm not saying he's a guy that can cover Rob Gronkowski, but he's a guy that can give you an option and be an athlete and big enough to kind of fight with Rob Gronkowski and at least make life difficult for Rob Gronkowski.
And with the 25th pick, as the Vikings have their original pick, we both have them addressing the secondary. I have them going with the little bit deeper as they go with the safety you really like. Xavier McKinney goes to the Vikings, and they're again, so they pick up a second first round pick to add to that secondary, which will be kind of key in the defensive rebuilding that they're doing. Is they're kind of going through Minnesota kind of an odd stage, as they're not completely rebuilding, but it looks like a rebuild. But they've now add two very talented defensive secondary members, and you have them going the secondary as well. Who's your guy?
Jeff Gladney, you kind of pointed it out. He's a scrappy kind of the Mike Zimmer type of guy. He's a guy that doesn't back down, even though he is a little undersized. I think he's a nice fit there at 25. They're able to kind of reload with Rhaegar and Gladney, both out of TCU, and kind of kill two birds with one stone in the first round of the draft.
And coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the way. We will wrap up the draft with the last seven picks. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. As we wrap things up, we've got the last seven picks of the draft. Number 26 would originally belong to the Miami Dolphins. However, for my pick, it now belongs to the Detroit Lions, as the Dolphins went up from number 5 to number 3 to select Tua Tagovailoa. So now the Lions get two picks with their first pick at number 5. I had them taking Jeffrey Okuda. Now, I have Matt Patricia looking at kind of the Bill Belichick way of looking at edge defenders, going with a very strong, very tough Iowa kid, AJ Epenesa. He is everything that matches up. He's not super athletic. His testing was kind of bad, but he's got production. Guys will say in the Big 12, between him and Josh Uche, those two were the two toughest guys to defend. They're big, they're strong, and that's what he's going to work hard, and that's what the Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia type of edge defender is what they're looking for.
And the Dolphins have this pick still for me. I have them taking one of the best players in the draft, in my opinion, Jonathan Taylor. So the Dolphins end up with Justin Herbert, Josh Jones, and Jonathan Taylor in this draft. They completely revamp their offense, and they bring in some young, exciting players. I think it would be a really good draft for the Dolphins and kind of reset their franchise in what is hopefully the right direction after Adam Gase kind of hurt them a little bit.
Yep, and then you saw all the ex-Dolphins doing well. Now they'll have a really, really good running back to give the ball to for Justin. That's a really good pick. At number 27, we reach an agreement again. The Seattle Seahawks address the edge. They pick up Yetur Gross-Matos out of Penn State, edge defender, pass rusher. That's kind of a perfect match for them, and kind of scary for Cardinals fans, especially if they bring back Jadeveon Clowney as well.
Yeah, it sounds like he's going to be not back with them. But, you know, like you said, if he is, it's an issue. Gross Matos actually high in comparison is that of Chandler Jones. So, I mean, you're talking about a long, linear athlete. Doesn't win in the, like, traditional pass rush sense, but has a, you know, arsenal of weapons, and he's got those long arms that he's able to, you know, really work over offensive linemen with. He'd be, like you said, a terror in the NFC West.
Number 28, the Baltimore Ravens. I have them going with, we're going to keep adding strength on strength. Jonathan Taylor, number one running guy, our running back one, he goes to the Ravens to make that rushing attack even better. That is quite the tandem. But plus, they've got the running back talent in there, and you add that to Lamar Jackson. That is devastating. I could have had them going with the defender. There's some other linebackers that you could have them going with, but I think adding the strength to strength is devastating and a good way to go for that team, especially where they built that offense.
Yeah, and I've got them taking Kenneth Murray, kind of another in the lineage of great linebackers in Baltimore. They'll end up getting probably the Defensive Rookie of the Year, because that's just how Baltimore does, right? They just sit back and let the draft come to them and then laugh all the way to great seasons every year.
For the Tennessee Titans at number 29, you have them replacing Jack Conklin. How do you them going that?
They replace Conklin, get a guy that we talked about a little earlier in Austin Jackson. Jackson's a really intriguing prospect. Youth on his side. Stand-up guy. He's from Arizona, I believe, right? He went to high school in Arizona. And so, you know, you look at the draft, look at kind of needs and falling guys and guys as they fit. Austin Jackson going to the Titans would kind of be a match made in heaven there. You get a guy on a line that is going to be better in the run game, and that's what he gets to go do is block for Derrick Henry and, you know, alongside some of these really talented guys. High-end comp out, you know, like a Billy Turner type. I've seen some comparisons to former Arizona Cardinal Bobby Massey. So, you know, you look at those comparisons. If that's your right tackle, you know, we've seen you're in a good spot.
And number 30, the Green Bay Packers, we both have them going with the receiver. Who's the receiver you've got them taking?
I have them taking local guy Brandon Ayuk out of Arizona State. You know, a kind of a Debo Samuel-like receiver, a guy that can, you know, it's interesting. He's got some qualities like Samuel. They're both at best with the ball in their hand. But Ayuk is a better guy deep, whereas Samuel is more versatile and kind of more sure-handed. So it's an interesting, you know, fit there with Aaron Rodgers. He'll be able to do some things and really offer an outlet to Rodgers and give him some youth along his receiving corps.
I love Brandon Ayuk. As an Arizona State fan, season ticket holder since 2007, I love him. I have the Packers going in a different direction. A guy that already came off the board for Seth. The Packers take Jalen Reagor out of TCU. Same kind of thing. They need another target for Aaron Rodgers. Add him to the mix. You're gonna give that great quarterback even better. Pick number 31, the San Francisco 49ers. You and I both have them trading out of that pick. You have them trading out of that their pick for the second time this round. Who trades up and for whom?
The Dallas Cowboys are going to come back up and replace the retired Travis Frederick. It's a huge thing now. You know, they need Frederick, or they need a center. They're going to go up and ensure that they get the best center. It's ironic because the guy they get, Cesar Ruiz, is actually, from a pedigree standpoint, is really similar to Frederick coming out of Wisconsin. You know, Ruiz is out of Michigan. Just a devastating, nasty interior offensive lineman. He's the type of guy that you look at, and unless you have an all-pro at one of your guards or your center position, you go, I don't really care who I've paid or what I have there. I just want that guy on my team. And so, you know, at 31, I think getting Ruiz in Dallas to kind of be the anchor of that talented offensive line would be a good get there.
And for me, I have the Chargers moving up for their quarterback. This could go one of either two ways because Jordan Love is still on the board. However, this is a little bit of tidbit that Seth and I have talked about a little bit over the last several weeks, that the Chargers low-key have some love for Jalen Hurts out of Oklahoma. And in this case, since they went with the offensive lineman at the top of the draft, now they get their quarterback. And what's kind of nice about this is that Jalen Hurts, in terms of skill set, he's a higher end Tyrod Taylor in many ways, because of he does have the throwing ability. You saw the production that he had at Oklahoma. He's a winner, played for Alabama, and then you add to the mix his athleticism. And so you've got somewhere kind of more like you've got a more athletic Dak Prescott. You've got a higher end Tyrod Taylor. Who's the comp that you had for him? It actually was a surprise to me, but it's a very good comp.
I don't know. Who did I have? I've thrown so many.
I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Blake. Maybe it was Blake that had it. But it was. I was like, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good comp. But they get to address that big hole at left tackle. And they've got their quarterback of the future, so they've got another quarterback to replace Tyrod Taylor, like has happened to him before in Buffalo, as we continue with the trend of quarterbacks that are pretty good but aren't that good, and so they always get replaced. And pick number 32, for me, the Chiefs, the defending champions, they take Cesar Ruiz, the guy that the Cowboys traded up to get. They already have a nice center right now, but this guy would be an upgrade, and you could even move him out to guard in the meantime if you want to put him in the starting lineup right away. And you have them adding to another actually great weapon to forget this undrafted rookie thing. Let's add some talent to the offense.
Yeah, and they pick up DeAndre Swift out of Georgia, the extremely talented running back. They're able to get a guy that can be just another kind of cog in that offense and give them multiple options everywhere. Remember, they were starting an undrafted rookie out of or in the Super Bowl. So now, you know, when you're the Super Bowl champs and you have the best quarterback in the NFL on one more year of his rookie deal, it's really easy to be greedy and kind of take a player like Swift and see and just kind of swing for the fences to see if you can potentially create the greatest offense that's ever played in the NFL.
And yeah, and that would do it. That would be a good way to do it. And that, folks, wraps up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 265. It's our 2020 Rise Up Sea Red mock draft. This will hit Wednesday morning. Make sure you listen to I hope you've listened to it before the draft, or if you listen to it after the draft, you can either think we're geniuses or morons, kind of what everyone thinks anyway. Thanks for listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back next week as we talk about what the Cardinals did in the draft and talk about the draft in general. Thanks for listening, guys. Go Cardinals. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom,
or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!